offices in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8229. That's 1-800-723-8229. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet us a question, it's at Dumo, D-U-M-O. Or if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com, and we carry an audio and video version of all of our broadcasts. So if you miss them live, you can always go to the website and see them. They usually pop up a few hours after the broadcast is over. But again, we have so much to talk about in the next couple of hours, and there is obviously the resignation of the Attorney General Eric Holder. There's the airstrikes in Syria. There's the president's speech at the UN, where he sounded almost like George W. Bush. I mean, it was the bravado of Barack Obama. We're going to talk about all of those things. But I want to put it in context with the fear that we have, and I think it's growing fear that many people have about life in America. And these are things we do not know at this moment what direct links there may be to foreign terrorists, or whether these incidents that I'm about to reference are part of an international conspiracy of some sort, or are they just the deranged actions of mentally ill people, as happens frequently in this country. But we've had much of the country shut down, the air traffic shut down, because of a disgruntled former employee with a mental illness who set a fire at an FAA facility and has done just as devastatingly affected the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not, I would say millions of people, just by his act. And then we have the horrible beheading of an office worker in Kansas City, in Oklahoma City, by a disgruntled worker who beheads her. And again, that trail in that case takes us back to a mosque, takes us back to someone who allegedly was trying to proselytize to fellow employees and co-workers. And so we have two frightening situations, two individuals, one we know something about in Oklahoma City, which certainly has quite a date mark and a history to it. And then we have the busiest airport in the world shut down. And I want to talk about all of these things tonight, but I want to start to talk with Tim Krolaitis. Tim is a member of the Tea Party. He's usually on talking about government regulation, and there's too much of it. And I don't know whether we really have a left-right discussion really here tonight. It's really about Americans talking about what our life is like. And just picking up on those two subjects, Chris, Tim, what do you come away with from those two stories tonight?
I look at it, especially in the Oklahoma incident, that it's inevitable. I mean, we have a smaller world now with communications and everything. I believe there was a statement by ISIS prior to this gentleman coming into his old workplace and beheading an individual, telling people to go out and do this particular type of thing. So what bothers me is how we're so afraid to mention what we think what is occurring. When we see an individual, we call it a workplace violence type scenario. Well, there's more to it. And I think for us to get to solutions, that we have to look at these things as they are. And I understand that we don't want to condemn a whole group, but I guarantee you, if this was a Tea Party member that did this, you'd be out talking about Tea Party. So when there's a religious affiliation and there's a continuation of these types of things happen, we got to take that into account.
Chris Roebling, how do you see the actions of the past week?
Well, excuse me. I think that with respect to the FAA, which I was personally affected by that, trying to get home from a business trip. You know, I mean, I think that we all must have an abiding sense of the fragility of contemporary life. I think contemporary life appears robust and appears very strong, but in fact, contemporary life is very easily disrupted. And so there is this skein of sort of normalcy, but if some element in that, whether it's, you know, transportation in this case, or communications or electronics, you know, you begin to look at the junction points in society, and they are susceptible. And if they are disrupted, then society is disrupted. I think that's important in that, you know, you get into things like the smart grid, you get into things like electromagnetic pulse, you get into things like people who want to do us harm, there are ways for people to do us harm. We can talk about that. But on the other hand, I want to say I am just as disappointed as ever, and maybe more disappointed than ever, in the mainstream media, because I think they will not discuss the real nature of what happened at Fort Hood or of what happened at Oklahoma City.
Mary Hardigan also joins us. She is our liberal Democrat, but again, I don't necessarily think that the lines are easily drawn tonight. But what's your take over these, just the two incidents that I talk about, and how much havoc they have wrecked with the country?
Well, I agree that that modern society requires something from all of us, and what that is that we trust one another. That there's, it requires a lot of that. So when we get on a bus, or when you walk down the street, or when you leave your house, you have to trust that the brakes on the bus are going to work, that the people that you're walking with will help you if you trip and fall. As I see every day on the streets of Chicago, people are looking out kind of for one another. So these kinds of incidents are dangerous because they go at the trust that we have in one another. As far as the FAA thing goes, I really just do not understand why there isn't some redundancy in the system. The idea that something so minor could break down something that is supposed to have a grid of backup. I mean, what? Squirrels don't chew through junction boxes. There's no lightning in Chicago. There are no floods. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could
happen. But on the Oklahoma City, just following up on the Oklahoma City portion of my setup tonight, the fact that he was a Muslim, a radical Muslim, someone who was trying to convince other people to become Muslims, and the manner in which he chose, and obviously he had been to a radical, a mosque in Oklahoma City. I mean, that's more than just a casual trust of someone. That goes beyond trust. That goes about
people,
suspicion.
The ISIS people, what they're trying to do, and when they go into an area, what do? They try to divide the community against one another. If you're not the Scotsman wearing the right kind of kilt, you're on the wrong side. If you're not the Methodist that belongs to the right kind of the Methodist church with the right kind of Methodist preacher, you're on the other side. I mean, you can't. That's what they're trying to do, and they're trying to have us look at one another and say, who could that be? And the way that we fix that, there are a lot of tools. There are law enforcement tools, but there are other tools that we need to use to build those bonds. I mean, the truth of the matter is that the Muslim community has been very forthcoming to law enforcement. They have brought a number of concerns to the FBI.
I don't think there's anybody that doubts that. But again, I think to Chris's point, and when we come back, I want to talk about it. 1-800-723-8020, and that is, whether or not the media and political leaders are too timid in describing what is before us. Back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches? Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Come on back to Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Chris Roebling, I want to kind of switch gears and kind of elaborate on what we're talking about, but let's talk about the bigger, broader issue, and that is the terror threat, the ISIS threat against the United States.
Right.
The president went to the United Nations this past week, and I think you would even acknowledge that we heard probably the most bombastic speech, if he can be bombastic, that Barack Obama has ever given insofar as the threat, and he sounded very much like George Bush.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it's taken a long time, and we're not going to begrudge him for coming over, but this is, I believe this amounts to a repudiation of his prior position, and I think that he has tried for 5.5 years this foreign policy that has not been ruled by principle. It's really been ruled by political considerations. And this was what we heard in the 2008 campaign about, you know, President Bush is arrogant. He won't admit a mistake. He won't talk to enough people. I'll go out. I'll extend my hand. We'll be able to sit down with the Iranians. Well, none of that has gone appropriately or none of that has gone well for the Obama worldview. So now he's got to come back to the Bush. But thank goodness he has. And thank goodness I give him credit for getting the Sunni Muslim
they said
states.
Tonight that the American intelligence underestimated. They underestimated.
I'm shocked. I am really shocked that he would blame the American intelligence agencies and complex. He himself personally took on the responsibility for the statement of ISIS is the JV. Okay, he didn't right. say. I get briefings from the intelligence community that says ISIS or ISIL is the JV. He said, oh, they're really the JV, and you're snickering and condescending as usual. And tonight with Steve Croft, who is a personal friend, I mean, this is the whole media complex. Steve Croft is a personal friend of Barack Obama's, and that's why he's gotten all of the interviews. They've all been softball interviews. The Atlantic magazine, this is not some Tea Party publication, has pointed this out. And he goes on and he blames the intelligence community. So he hasn't lost,
Mary
he hasn't
Hartigan,
lost all of
you,
his bad
you
habits.
Are a loyalist to the president, but in this particular case, you come from maybe a harder left position even than he does, usually. What do you think of the rhetoric that came forth last week at the United Nations? And you and your liberal friends, how do they feel about this new muscular, at least rhetoric, that we're getting from the president?
Well, when all you have is a hammer, everything starts to look like a nail. And so we have the world's greatest military, hands down. And I think that there is a willingness that it's caused other avenues, other levers of power to become flabby. And
speak to the question. What do you think of Barack Obama's new rhetoric on the world stage? And do you agree with what Chris Roebling just said, that he's sounding an awful lot like George Bush? And perhaps when he looked at all of the intelligence and everything came in here, he came to the same conclusion that George Bush would do or any future president might come to. And we've got to do what we have to do when we're faced with the enemy that we have.
I think that George Bush was wrong to the extent that Barack Obama is being bombastic. He's wrong about that. Bluster is fine, but I want to see what we're going to do. I want that you need to have both strategy and tactics.
Do you think he has both?
No.
Do you think he has either?
Well, I think he has tactics. I think that's
you
what
think
we're
he has
seeing
strategy?
Now.
Again, you're a Tea Party guy. We're usually talking about other issues, not military strategy and national security. But you folks care about the future of the country as well.
I think he's a political animal, and everything that he's doing right now is posturing. It's a political posture. I don't think he believes anything that he said at the UN. I think he is who he is when he came aboard, and he thought he could talk.
But if we're hearing that the American people are war weary, is it schizophrenic, Chris? I mean, they say they're war weary, yet they want to be. They don't like ISIS. They would like to be protected, and they have a president that's, as we know, tries to have it both ways.
With all respect to Mary, I think that one element of the foreign policy of Barack Obama has not changed. It's still basically grounded in public opinion research, and so I don't think that he has introduced principle into his foreign policy, and I don't think that. You know, we the only principle really, I mean, and I'm not kidding when I say this, the only principle really that I see operative throughout the entire 68 months of his presidency is abject apology for America, which he dragged into this forum by mentioning Ferguson, which had absolutely no place whatsoever. Ferguson, Missouri, had no place whatsoever in front of these world killer.
Leaders.
No, they're not world leaders. They're killers and they're despots and they are criminals and they're basically thugs. And most of the folks out there at the General Assembly of the United Nations are running a con game and they're running an extortion business back home. These are not democratically elected leaders. And the problem with this administration and its foreign policy is it does not stand up for principle. It just operates on the basis of polls, and the polls said you got to do something about ISIS, and that's why he's been shoehorned into this thing. And I thought he was using Bush rhetoric, but it didn't seem like it had taken.
Is he being rolled by the military, in your view, Mary?
I don't really know. I hear different things about that. I really haven't been able to make up my own mind. I think that, I mean, as far as how to run a war and how to do things, there are checklists and books and lots of plans. And when we went into Iraq, Donald Rumsfeld and George Bush tore all those up, and I am not sure that anybody on the political side has been listening to what the professional military people have said for about 14 years.
But also it seems to me that when you're talking about when you're measuring a political leader, or frankly when you're measuring a man or you're measuring a woman, your words should mean something. When you draw a line in the sand and say, here, don't cross that line, if somebody crosses the line, I don't care whether it's your 13-year-old child or whatever the case may be, you have got to make an example of those people who challenge you and step over that line. He didn't do it. It showed weakness. And it showed weakness on the world stage. And it created doubt amongst our allies. Now, fortunately, we now have some allies, even in the Arab world, who are participating in this military action. But part of it goes back to his inability to really stand up and be firm. That's why I asked the question last week at the UN. He sounded like a guy who had woken up, reached down, and discovered that he had a pair, and decided, at least rhetorically, to talk about it. But do you think he has a strategy? I mean, how long is that going to go?
As long as the press clippings operate, you might as well break out the foam pillars again for this guy, because he's a political animal. That's what he does. He know, like you said, the public might not be privy to this, but a lot of times our allies maybe, and he had to speak that way to the UN to maybe prop them up in their support.
So you think the American people are changing their opinion and they want stepped up military? Is that the way you view it, Chris?
The American people, the American people have reacted to the beheadings. The American people have reacted to the beheadings. Prior to the beheadings, the administration had taken the position that there would be very light, very humanitarian, very limited involvement related to any action of ISIL, and that was going to be enough, and that we shouldn't get further into it. Then we saw creep, because we started talking about the Mosul Bridge, or Mosul Dam. I would like to point out a few weeks after we were talking about it here on the program, but they got to the Mosul Dam, and then they got to another dam. And all of a sudden, you see the mission starting to expand. And then the beheadings. And the beheadings sent public awareness up to the roof, and then it sent public concern up to the roof. And then there was another beheading, and then there was the British. And so this intensified a demand that these guys saw in the White House polling that they've got to do something. And so this is what Obama has done. I hope.
But they did not see the need to escalate into Syria until 10 days ago.
Except
I think they had chosen not to head toward Syria until they were able to convince the Sunni states. Okay, so this is Jordan and Saudi Arabia and UAE and Qatar. They convinced those guys to come back in, and those are the very Arab Sunni states that were left hanging in the wind when Obama reversed course and did not attack Syria for crossing the red line on chemical weapons a year ago.
Mary.
Well, the thing that worries me about the president's UN speech and about all of this uproar is that when you have an when you are have a standing army against an asymmetric force in the geographical and political position that ISIL is in, your forces are not well aligned to deal with it on a purely military basis unless you are willing to become an occupying force. And that is where we're going. And unless we come up with a different set of strategies, some military, some political, some humanitarian, I mean, you have to have a full list of things that you're working on.
So
we
you
also
don't
need
see
to have
it.
A
you
strategy with regard to the Kurds.
Does everybody at this table agree, or let me ask you the question, does everybody agree that eventually, not more than just the advisors were going to be there, that this is a war that is going to require boots on the ground somewhere, someplace, no matter what Barack Obama is saying now, there's going to be American troops, more American troops on the ground in this fight, and maybe not in the far too distant future.
Absolutely, everybody agrees with it. We all agree. And yet the president is taking
1-800-723-8029. I'd like to get your reaction as well. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I understand we've got some technical problems again this evening. The quality of the signal may not be what it is used to be or should be. But again, we're giving you the best show we can tonight. 1-800-723-8029.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
From Schaumburg, Illinois to Knoxville, Tennessee, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. We're going to introduce our guests right now. We'll let them introduce themselves, and we start with Mary Hartigan.
Hi, I'm Mary Hartigan. I'm an attorney in private practice here in Chicago.
Chris Roebling.
Hi, Chris Roebling. Good to be with you again. I do crisis communications with Clearspan Strategic LLC.
And Tim Krilaitis.
Hi, I'm Tim Krilaitis, and I am the chairman of the Will County Tea Party Alliance and individual industrial consultant.
We're going to switch gears and talk about Eric Holder in just a moment, but I just want to take a personal note. As everyone in the world knows, Derek Jeter, the great shortstop for the New York Yankees, played his last game today, one of the great credits in the history of baseball, a truly great American baseball player, both on and off the field. And also, with far less publicity, Chicago said goodbye today to one of the best and most beloved White Sox players of all time. Paul Konerko stepped down. I was at the big celebration last night. The park was filled. It was nice to see that park filled again, cheering Paul Konerko, who spent 16 seasons with the Chicago White Sox. Again, not in the spotlight to the degree that Derek Jeter was and deserved to be. But again, big hats off to Paul Konerko. And also on a very personal note, I have to share with you that I had one of those things on my bucket list got crossed off last night. For the first time in 55 years of going to a baseball game, I finally caught a foul ball.
Hey!
And I will also share with you that it was really something, and by the way, there was nothing heroic about it. It was bouncing, and I got on all fours. I got out of my seat, and I wasn't fighting people. But there was something when I saw that ball come falling down from the next row up, and it hit, and it was in my hand. There was a moment, I don't know whether I can describe it to people, but there was a sense of accomplishment. I jokingly said bucket list. But and then everybody was cheering and high-fiving. I mean, there was nothing heroic about it. In fact, the friends that were behind me, we posed for a very heroic picture to make it look real good. But I'm telling you the truth. And it's not the heroic picture is not going to end up on YouTube or anyplace else. But I did take it to, you know, maybe 50 years from now, I'll tell the story. But it was really it was a unique experience catching the first foul ball. I know it's great. Not a big deal.
The world was right for a moment, wasn't it?
The world was, and I deserved a little credit because my horrible week with technology and losing my iPhone and everything else.
Oh,
let's go to Sharon listening to us in Addison, Illinois on WLS. Go ahead, Sharon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, my concern is this. Our very porous border plays into all of this mess. Plus, we are allowing people in from the Middle East. I think we should stop any immigrants, any other flow from terrorist-sponsored countries to come here. Everybody calls me a racist. They say, oh, you're this, you're that, you're bigoted, you're this and that. I'm just so fed up with it. I'm so fed up with political correctness, which is what I think is going to be the death knell of this country if we don't start taking things a little more serious and quit acting so stupid by saying this is workplace violence. It's just like Tammy Duckworth, who happens to be my particular representative here in my district. She called that horrible thing at Fort Hood workplace violence when the guy's yelling out Allah Akbar and murdered 13 people and maimed countless of others. I just see people like her and others in public office is just very irresponsible.
But Sharon, let me just follow up. I mean, I generally agree with your point, but in the reality, at least let's focus on the events of this week.
Sure.
Are we not dealing in each of those cases with workplace violence? Now,
in a shopping mall.
Let me finish. Can I finish? Can I finish, Sharon?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's workplace violence in each case. One case also involves obvious mental illness. That was the case, the guy that set the fire and then tried to kill himself. That was that was a mental illness. The other guy, the Oklahoma City guy, Nolan, clearly there was something suspect about the manner in which he did his deed. So there was a mental illness there, but it was tied to a extreme religious belief because of the mosque and the involvement that he became here. So each of them are correctly identified as workplace violence, but each of them have, you know, they go back further and they deal with much bigger, broader issues of either someone who believes in a jihadist philosophy or someone just believes in getting back because he lost his job. Go ahead.
I don't link the person who did the royal mess up at the airport with this Alton.
I'd like to react to both of those, Sharon, if I may.
Close and personal.
Sharon.
I'm looking at somebody who could be lurking in the shadows of a shopping mall, of a school.
He
could have been a longtime janitor and decides he's going to try to convert some kids.
Yes.
And before you know it, there's body parts found. That may sound macabre, but where are we going with this?
No, you're right. Let's let Chris respond.
Thank you, Sharon. What links these two, I think, is, and I say this with all respect for my Democratic friends, Barack Obama was elected with an obsession to try and ameliorate differences, which I think were perceived, not real, between the United States and the world Muslim community. And let's notice that there are hundreds of millions of very peace-loving, non-jihadist Muslims from Morocco all the way to Malaysia, and many here in the United States. Not every Muslim is a jihadist.
Who have, to pick up Mary's point, who have over the years cooperated with federal authorities to root out radicals within their...
And we need more of that, and we need more denunciation by moderate Muslims of what's going on at the fringes. But what I consider to be one of the terrible effects of the Obama administration, and this is not, in my opinion, too far a stretch, you have the unwillingness to acknowledge something like Fort Hood for what it was. And then you have the security breakdown at the White House Secret Service so that a guy can get over the fence and into the front door. And then you've got the abject failure at the FAA in a post-9/11 context to screen and understand who's getting inside and what they can do and who they really are. I think that this is illustrative. I mean, we're hearing issues. If you've been reading about the Department of Homeland Security, people are leaving the agency in droves. There is a terrible morale problem at the agency. I think it's run by somebody who has got this. My first order of business every day is to be nice to Muslims generally and act like there are no issues with jihad. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. And it is going to result. I'm not happy to say this, but I think this is putting us at greater risk for a catastrophic event than we were on January 19th, 2009.
I agree with you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Mary, your comment.
Well, the Department of the idea of the Department of Homeland Security is A, Orwellian, and B, an idea doomed to fail, because you just can't have all of the functions that it does in one agency. It is a disaster by design. And so I think that it needs to be reorganized. I think that that one thing that having search warrants, which got issued with like 900%, like 98% of the time back when we still required them, is that it requires you to organize your thinking about what you're looking for. We are now in this situation where every haystack looks like a needle. And so you're going through everything, and nobody will say we can't look at this or not look at that because what if we miss something? Meanwhile, people's thinking is not very organized. So rather than thinking about worrying about porous borders, when all of the incidents that we're talking about happened with people who are citizens or legal residents.
The borders are porous to some extent, and it is very possible that there are those from the Middle East or jihadists that could be coming into our country either from Canada or from Mexico. I don't think there's anybody that questions that. The bigger, broader issue of broader surveillance about how you track down these people, I mean, we will soon know in the next several days. The story is going to unfold about Alton Nolan and in Oklahoma City. We're going to know more about him. We're going to know what mosque he went to, all the people. We know some of that stuff now. And all of that stuff about him is going to come. But the question then is, the other mosques that are in this country, should there be surveillance on those mosques? Let me make this point. How do we know that with the abilities of the NSA, how do we not know, or do we believe, let me put it that way, does anybody at this table believe that the United States does not have the ability to listen in on everything that happens in a church or mosque in this country or around the world? Do they not have the capability to do that? Chris?
Well, if somebody said, I've got to hear what's going on in this church in that place, we could do that. But I think starting tomorrow morning, if somebody walked in and said, I've got to hear what's going on in this church in that place, it would take a few days. I don't think we have the existing capability. We do have, and I'm a Fourth Amendment conservative, okay? So I believe in barriers between the government and ourselves and our effects and our possessions and our homes. And I believe that that is one of the great bulwarks of liberal democratic society, which, by the way, does not exist in the ISIL-controlled area. But I think that we should understand that the porous nature of contemporary life is such that almost everything about us can be learned through electronics. And there is a capability at the federal government to hear every mobile phone conversation tomorrow.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much. Let's go to Art listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Go ahead, Art. You're on the air.
Ladies and gentlemen, my comment is that, yeah, there's too many federal agencies. I mean, we're being too politically correct here. And what needs to happen is we need to do more background checks on these people, because we can't be afraid of offending people.
Well, I know, but that requires more coordination between agencies. I don't know whether we have too many federal agencies. We probably have
a lot of duplication. Like that. I just don't like having too many. I mean, we have like too many czars and too many agencies. I don't feel comfortable. In the old days, we used to do human intelligence. We didn't have any computers that we had people spying on over the phone or on the computer. So I just think we need to do a better job of doing background checks on who we hire or who works for us.
Tim, what's your take on that?
I would agree with him, obviously smaller government, but it's pretty clear it's become a bureaucratic nightmare between agencies. It's bloated, it's big, it's large. They don't communicate with each other, and when they do, half the time it's wrong. And now we sell military vehicles to them.
There's this body of knowledge called administrative law, which I'm sure Mary practices. But anyway, you know, we have a structure out there that creates rules which really have the force of law, and it's these administrative agencies. And there are different types. There are sort of types that report to the president and other so-called independent agencies. And these, and this is a, for all intents and purposes, using the term loosely, this is a lawmaking cluster in society that's extremely powerful. And it is impossible for the average person to have the slightest understanding of what is going on in that sector of society.
I want to switch gears and bring it up to something else that was discussed on some of the Sunday morning shows today. And the idea came up from Bill O'Reilly. And Bill O'Reilly suggested that what the United States needs to have and our allies need to have is there has to be a mercenary force that is created. And they fight, and they fight for the United States and the West. He said that he was at a cocktail party last night with Henry Kissinger, that Kissinger had agreed with him on that concept. What do you think of a mercenary group that would fight the wars and basically farm out the job of fighting our battles, Mary?
Warlordism has never been a very good strategy. In fact, one of the achievements of nationalism was to drive the warlords out of business, so that we should now start a brand new warlord, because if it's fine for us to put together a group of mercenaries to send around willy-nilly and to not have under national control, it's fine for somebody else to do it. And his name begins with P, and his first name is Alexander. And I think it's a really stupid idea.
What do you think,
Chris? I think it's a pretty stupid idea, too. I think the whole point here is that the United States of America stands for something. And I don't know if he believes it or not, but at least Barack Obama got out there and said, the United States of America stands for something, and we are going to lead. Those are two things he hasn't said in his 68 months of benighted leadership, so-called. Anyway, I believe we stand for something. I believe our allies stand for something. And I believe that's something worth standing for. And that's the liberal democratic tradition that we've all inherited from our forebears.
Should we be prepared then, Tim? Should we be prepared that this war really is maybe the Third World War? This is the Third World War that's going to be around for a long time. Maybe this is a war that will never end. Because it has two fronts. It has the foreign front, where all the foreign fighters are fighting, and it has the growing potential that as we wage war against our enemies sworn to kill us halfway around the world, every time we drop a bomb, we are perhaps igniting some radical Islamist in the United States or some disgruntled American, someone who hates this country. And there may be a variety of reasons why they hate the country. They may be jihadists. They may be just crazy. Whatever they may be, white supremacists. The bottom line is they hate America. And they will use this opportunity to create havoc in our society, to burn our FAA facilities, to try to bomb planes, to go crazy in a shopping mall, to shoot up a high school. And this is life in America, and it's a war that's never, ever going to end.
Wow, that's a tough question. Why don't you give that one to Chris?
No, I want to get it from you.
Yeah, I believe it's a war of attrition. I think it's being played out in the Middle East, and to some extent it always has. And as technology advances, it becomes smaller and smaller. It becomes closer and closer to home. You know, perhaps in the past a lot of this happened, but we weren't privy to a lot of it. Now they come overseas. They have access to technology. They have access to travel. They have, you know, the world's getting smaller, and some of this stuff is going to affect us here at home. And the question is, why are we in the Middle East?
Mary, you seem startled when I was asking that question.
Well, the thing is, you know, we've spent an hour almost talking about what we're going to do with a barrel of a gun. What about the money, baby? Go after the money.
Oh,
these
yeah.
Guys,
well,
go after the funding. Go after.
That's why we were bombing the refineries.
The oil fields, yes, right.
The oil fields,
right?
And the refineries. And I completely agree. I mean, economically.
And the supply, the arms
the
suppliers.
The money is not going to immediately affect the deranged mind, whether that is a deranged mind of a jihadist or whether it is a deranged mind of a white supremacist or it is a deranged mind of someone who's just a deranged mind. Finding those people, rooting those people out is going to be a lifelong thing. These situations that we're dealing with right now are going to be happening more often, not less, in the future. And the question is there a way to dilute it in
there
some
is.
Way? And I want to hear your. We're going to start the second hour because you're going to have the answer to this question. This will make us all sleep comfortably tonight. And if you're listening to this broadcast on radio, don't go where you are. Don't leave where you are, because Mary could be bringing peace and security to this nation. If you're watching us on television, too bad, you will not hear the next hour. If you're listening to us on radio and the quality of the sound tonight isn't quite what it used to be, it's another phone problem here at Beyond the Beltway. We're working it out. We're getting you a show. Phone number 1-800-723-8289. I want to hear from a lot more people. You probably all just tuned off 60 Minutes. You've now heard what Barack Obama said. He was opposite us this evening. That's why we haven't had a lot of calls, because you know what a huge number of supporters there are for the president in the audience in this broadcast. Not too many. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away.
Clear the air lanes. Clear all air lanes.
Svengoolie has been clearing the air lanes for a long time. Celebrate with MeTV, WCIU the U, and the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Friday, October 10th for an evening with Rich Coase, celebrating 35 years as Svengoolie. See the new Svengoolie exhibit, meet the man, and dress up for a costume contest. For tickets and more information, go to museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Brought to you by MeTV, the U, and these sponsors.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches.
Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Clear the air lanes. Clear all air lanes.
Svengoolie has been clearing the air lanes for a long time. Celebrate with MeTV, WCIU the U, and the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Friday, October 10th for an evening with Rich Coase, celebrating 35 years as Svengoolie. See the new Svengoolie exhibit, meet the man, and dress up for a costume contest. For tickets and more information, go to museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Brought to you by MeTV, the U, and these sponsors.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway tonight, featuring commentary by Meredy Hardigan, Tim Krolaitis, and Chris Roebling. Our telephone lines remain open, toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. The phones are working tonight. And if you'd like to email us a comment, Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. And if you want to tweet us a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, you can join us on the World Wide Web by going to beyondthebeltway.com. We continue our conversation with our guests that began in the last hour. We are going to talk about the departure of Eric Holder in a little bit. But before the break, you gave a great tease, Mary, because you suggested to the audience that you had the answer to bring peace and tranquility to the country in this rather tumultuous times in which we live.
Well, I think that's – there's a little bit of sarcasm in that, I'm sure, because there isn't really a plan that can ever bring the peace and tranquility that we all desire to every aspect of our lives. But in World War II, we communicated – to ourselves, to all segments of our society, and to our friends, allies, and to our enemies, what our values were. And we need to do that. We need to have, for lack of a better word, propaganda pieces. There needs to be a organized, coordinated effort from churches and philanthropic organizations.
What should it say?
And, that we believe in liberal democracy, individualism, and also shared responsibility. No, I don't think we say that. I don't think we communicate that. The reason that you're
but
that
we
you,
all
that
but we also
talking about copycat terrorist activities is because ISIL has been very good at communicating its ideas.
But we also in articulating who we are and what we stand for. In the 21st century, we are a nation that has for many years respected women far more than many other countries of the world do. We respect the rights of gays and lesbians to live together under one roof now in marriage, which is anathema to much of the world beyond the United States. We believe that women can walk around without having a burqa over their face. They can walk around in pantsuits. We are lenient when it comes to drug usage in this country. That's what we stand for. And those ideals, which may not be the ideals of Norman Rockwell, but that's part of what America stands for. And those things are anathema to much of the world who are gathering against us to cut our heads off.
I don't think those are our ideals.
I think they are.
It's life in America.
I think that's
different than ideals.
I think the treasury of Judeo-Christian respect for the individual and an ordering of society that puts individual rights in the inviolable category and which makes government the servant of people and not people the servants of government, okay? Just to start with that basic kind of Judeo-Christian learning, is needed now more than ever. This is the long twilight struggle that President Kennedy talked about, but we're not up against communism now. And we have many allies in the ranks of the billion Muslims who are out there in the world. Our first treaty of friendship was with Morocco in about 1801, and that was because of the Barbary pirates. And Morocco has been an ally, qualifies as one of our oldest allies, therefore, okay? And you, if you want to find multiculturalism and pluralism and respect for differences in society, you read the sophistication of the Ottoman Turkish Empire, which I'm not saying that we want to instantiate the Ottoman Turkish Empire, but I'm saying that there are a lot of lessons in history about people learning to live together. Now, these Martin Marty, I think he was on the show at one point or another. Martin Marty, professor at the University of Chicago, mid-1990s, wrote Fundamentalism's Observed, 3-volume treatise, and he predicted everything that we are going through right now.
But how do we get through? How do we get through to the part of the world that hates us? Because as the president said at the UN this past week, and I'm paraphrasing now, sometimes you got to use force. Sometimes you got to get their attention. And sometimes, frankly, he didn't say this, but others have, and I'll say, sometimes you've got to kill them before they kill you.
I would, for once, I would agree with him. Unfortunately, I think it's a political stunt, you know, consistent with everything else he's done. But it's hard to break that communication that you were mentioning, Bruce, to tell them who we are. They know who we are. They don't like who
they
we
don't
are.
Like who we are, right. Mary. What about
that's
that?
It. They just
they
don't like it.
They don't. They don't like us.
Send your propaganda over. Tell them how much you love them. They don't care. They will saw your head off.
Right.
It isn't a question of telling other people how much we love them. It's explaining to them who
they don't
we are.
Care.
But
go
they
tell
don't
them
care.
Across
they don't
the
care.
World. Across the world, we have allies. Even in the most desperate, despotic places, we have allies. People who want their country and their village and their town and their region and their state to become more like us.
And they all
and
cheered. They
to,
all cheered when Barack Obama
add,
was elected because he was going to answer all those questions. And then he went on his apology tour to a lot of these countries that we're talking about even right now.
We have callers. We've got to go to these callers. We're going to go to John and Markham listening to us on WLS Radio. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think one of the most illustrative points we can make out of tonight is the fact that the nice young lady here keeps saying about this and that, but they hate us. They watch yeah. MTV, they watch this and that. It's our culture, it's societal.
Right.
And I was going to, we need to think so far outside of the box, and we need to go back into warlord villages, and we need to go back into regionalism so we can get a handle on it until we can start, in even with our own forces, putting, you know, combat teams in that are volunteer that can go back to Afghanistan, Iraq, and I not hundreds of thousands, but permanent areas of control.
I want to
start training them.
We got
to go,
John. If I
it.
Could get, I want to get to
this.
I want to get to the ISIL thing. I want to get to the ISIL thing. I want to be very clear. The ISIL fighters are beyond hope. Okay, and Mary
I
is
agree.
Not. Okay, Mary agrees.
Still
so I they must be extirpated, and. Obama did not do himself a favor.
They have to be killed.
Yeah, extirpated is worse than killed. Okay, this is like
how do you spell that?
When Kim Jong Il had the guy stand out and he was mortared to death so that he would be obliterated. That's extirpation. Okay, and that's what we got to do to these guys. They must be extirpated. Okay, that's where they are. A lot of folks out there, 99.9% of the people in the world are not like the ISIL people. I'm all for killing every ISIL guy and extirpating the entire movement, but the ideas endure. And either we've got ideas of which we're proud,
right.
And I am proud of these ideas. Ronald Reagan taught me that. John F. Kennedy taught me that. Even Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, we are going to be proud to be Americans. We're going to be proud to be Democrats, small d Democrats. And either we're going to be proud of that and we're going to advance that flag, or we're going to have this constant war that Bruce was talking about.
When we come back, we've got more callers, and we're also going to hear from one of the leading experts on terrorism in the United States, Tom Akitis from DePaul University. They're all coming back when we come back in about 3 minutes.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Back. Thank you very much for joining us. In just a few moments, we'll hear from Tom Akitis from DePaul University. But around the table, we have Mary Hartigan. She is an attorney in private practice. Tim Krolaitis is a leader of the Tea Party movement in the state of Illinois, in the Will County, and also in Plainfield Township, where he's also involved with the Republicans as well. And Chris Roebling is with us, and he is a principal in Clear Span Strategies.
Clear Span Strategic.
Strategic, okay.
See, you turn off the lights in here after the TV.
Let's go to Rancho Mirage, California, where Robert is listening to us on KTPR. Nice to hear from the great Rancho Mirage area. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling up because there's some reports that this ISIS group was created by the Central Intelligence Agency, a la Vietnam, where they create the boogeyman. We got to fight the boogeyman. What I'm worried about is that President Obama is basically leading what amounts to a world war. We're shadow boxing with Russia, which is backing Syria. We have no declaration of war by Congress on ISIL to give the president is operating extra constitutionally. And basically, this is all a scam to help Lockheed Martin and the defense industry.
It is amazing to hear you say that. I mean, it's Barack Obama. I mean, I could understand when you were throwing that at Dick Cheney with his Halliburton background. False though it was, manifestly false though it was, but for you guys to be throwing that canard up at Barack Obama and Joe,
and Robert, but
where is my plagiarized speech, Biden? You know,
but let me, Robert, let me
low for you,
Robert, let me follow up on one aspect of what you had to say, okay? Because I think there may be agreement from everyone with a portion of what you said, and that is the issue, the role of Congress.
Oh yeah.
In this matter.
Who
John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, said today that he would be willing to call back his members if the president gave him the word that he wanted it done. So at this particular point, and again, we've had a profile in cowardliness because everyone has gone their separate ways. They want to push this decision off beyond the election. But at this moment in time, I'm going to start with you, Mary. Should the Congress be called back to debate this issue before the election so the people will hear a robust debate, because it appears that we are marching towards more war, and even though the president says no troops, no boots on the ground, I think we all agree that that will probably happen. Shouldn't that be debated now, and should the Congress step up and be called back?
It should be debated now. I don't think there's any question about that.
Tim, what about it?
And the
I believe so, too.
Congress has the power to bring the debate on its own. It need not wait for the president.
Oh,
it,
but that is a cop-out, Mary. Look.
What just speak about you.
Absolutely,
bring,
there should be a
bring
debate.
Bring Congress back.
Absolutely,
Robert, do you agree with that? You proposed the idea here.
I think, I think it's utmost importance that the Congress be reconvened in emergency session.
So you agree with Speaker Boehner. We all agree with Speaker Boehner tonight.
Yeah, but Obama doesn't agree with Speaker Boehner because Obama doesn't agree with Obama. When Bush was in the White House and we came out, we understood what was going on in Iran. Obama was one of the first guys, still as a United States senator, stand up. Oh, he can't do anything about that. He can't do it. He's got to come to us for to get authorization. Now they're coming up with, they said these resolutions are 2001, 2002, 60 days ago, they said they were no longer valid because all of our troops had left Iraq. Now they're relying on them as the legal foundation.
Do you believe it's utterly
hypocritical?
It is.
And it shows that our friend Tim here is
Robert,
right.
Let Robert. Go ahead, Robert.
I agree with that.
Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I think, they got us coming and going. What I would like to see is the president get a declaration of war on ISIL, ISIS within the boundaries of Syria and Iraq so he has authority to do what he's doing in Syria. Because this cruise missiling of Syria is an act of war on an independent nation backed by Russia, and getting this coalition together, to me, I look at this as Obama's getting together a world war. Instead of getting to peace and an end to war, he's starting a world war.
I think there's the possibility that I used that term in the last segment, and I think what's happening here is you're seeing the Obama administration spending their time with John Kerry. They're getting the allies together. They're getting the allies united again in the battle.
Except
what
Israel.
he's got to do now is he's got to get Congress involved. And he's got to call the Speaker's bluff. If the Speaker was bluffing, he said it on ABC today, if the Speaker wants to call the Congress back and have this debated before the election, it should be done now. My feeling is from a political standpoint, Obama may not want to do that because he may not want to force some Democrats in districts where there's a lot of voters like you, Robert. He doesn't want them to have to take a tough vote.
This is utterly political. And this is what Tim has been saying for the
whole time. By Boehner as well?
No. I'm saying the Obama administration approach to this, they won't even give a name to the military operation that is currently lobbing either cruise missiles or, actual sorties by American pilots and by coalition pilots into Syria and Iraq.
Robert, listen, thank you very much for your call. It's great to hear from Rancho Mirage. I'm going to be out there in the next couple of weeks at beautiful Palm Springs, so maybe I'll run into you over at Wang's on the Desert. How about that?
All right.
Let's go to Tom Mikaitis now. Tom, are you still with us? Tom, are you there? Tom Mikaitis joins us. He is a professor at DePaul University. His expertise is terrorism, world terrorism. He was a guest on this program last week. Tom, let me ask you let me start by asking you a political question before we get into the strategic question. How important do you think it would be, or is it important for Congress to come back and vote on this? Should we be having a robust congressional debate about what our policy is at this particular time?
Well, yes, of course we should, but good luck getting him to do this. Look, I'm kind of surprised by the amnesia. Ronald Reagan invaded Grenada without congressional approval. George H.W. Bush invaded Panama without congressional approval. Bill Clinton got us involved in Kosovo without congressional approval. There is, since, Korea, we have really had very little by way of Congress doing this because the complexity of politics has made that difficult. And quite honestly, Congress is running away from any responsibility on this.
Tom, you're absolutely wrong about this, and I'm going to tell you why. And I'm not surprised that you're wrong because of your fundamental political orientation.
Hold it. Guys.
I still have the line, don't I? I mean, Bruce, you asked me, right?
Tom, finish the question.
Not be interrupted, okay?
Finish the question, and then we're going to go to Chris.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. So the point here is there's no question that should be involved. By the same tokens, we live in a twilight world between war and peace. We're not moving into World War III. This is the nature of the contemporary security environment. It's complex, it's ongoing, it's low. It's been consistently like this for decades. And again, everyone, the Obama bashing is the flavor of the month. But the truth of the matter is, he's acting within very similar parameters as his predecessors, both Republican and Democrat, did.
That's wrong.
And Congress ran from Washington.
That's wrong.
They don't want to deal with this.
That's
all right,
wrong.
Let's, all right, now, Tom, Chris, you, make your comment.
You're absolutely wrong because, first of all, Harry Reid is sitting on 300 bills that have been passed by the U.S. House of Representatives that he refuses to call for a vote. That gives you a context for what's going on in Congress. Number two, Boehner appealed to the White House on numerous occasions for some kind of declaration, for some kind of resolution. The White House said, we're not doing that because the way we read 2001 and 2002, we are within those parentheses, notwithstanding the fact that 60 days ago we said they're no longer applicable, end parentheses. Finally, when you bring up Grenada or you bring up Panama, I will say, Tom, I think I interviewed you on WBEZ in the 1990s, and I expressed the same concerns about Bill Clinton not getting congressional approval. I said he should have been able to do it. He would have been able to do it. He should have done it. If you and I agree on that, so much the better. But in terms of Grenada and in terms of Panama, you're talking about exigent circumstances where things had to be done to save American students or because of Noriega. This is a situation where, even though he's now blaming the intelligence community, our president has known about ISIL slash ISIS for more than a year. He miscalculated, but this thing has been growing consistently, and he is not talking about some kind of overnight issue to save a couple of hostages. We are talking about an ongoing war where the administration itself, Tom, even though you don't want to admit it, has said specifically on the air, there is no end date. Now, that is not Grenada. That's not Panama.
Tom, go to you.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you like the policy, it's exigent circumstances, and the president is authorized to take action. When you don't agree with the policy, then he's acting outside of his bounds. There's great inconsistency here. There is growing support among the American people for this operation. We have a more extensive coalition now for fighting ISIL, ISIS, whatever you want to call it, than we had going into Iraq. I think what you've got here is, yes, I would absolutely like Congress to get on board. What they haven't really released, actually, they have discussed and given tacit approval to a lot of what he's doing. They just haven't released the money. That's the real thing they don't want to do.
No, that is exactly wrong. When the administration can't, Tom, you just don't, you're not, either you don't know what you're talking about or you're stating things that you know to be false. When the administration...
Let's have one at a time.
When the administration...
We'll come back to you, Tom.
When the administration...
I'm not yelling at your guest.
When the administration...
Can we have a civil conversation here?
Yeah, if you tell the truth, we'll have a civil conversation. When the administration asked Congress for an appropriation to fund the training element, that appropriation passed in the United States House of Representatives with overwhelming support from Republicans and considerable support from Democrats. It also passed in the Senate.
We are trying to shift
the burden onto Congress when it belongs with the executive under our Constitution.
We have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Tom, stay on the line, please. We will continue. We'll get calls from everybody and for everybody when we come back from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Chris Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Chris Roebling and Tim Krolaitis and Mary Hartigan around the table in Chicago. And also Tom Makatis joins us from DePaul University. Tom, I want to ask you this next question. We're going to move off the congressional debate that you and Chris had in the last segment. But since you were last on this program, there has been a significant escalation of airstrikes into Syria. There has been a greater expansion of the coalition of the willing that is actually providing military support. Tell us, if you can, about the added military support that now is fighting with the United States. How powerful are they, and where are their strengths and where are their weaknesses? And I want to get your assessment of the quality of the guys.
Well, the British and the French bring real military assets. The Jordanians, the Saudis, and the Emirates have somewhere around 100 attack aircraft of varying qualities. What they really bring to the table is moral credibility. They really prevent this from being spun as the U.S. picking on the Arabs, the U.S. going to war with Islam. That's their real addition to it. They're probably funding some activities as well. But, you know, if you look at the number of sorties and strikes, say, even in Libya, which we were brought into really largely at the request of the French and the British, about 75% of them were flown by American pilots and so on. And the escalation is what was to be expected. You know, I mean, I think what really triggered this was the Syrian refugee crisis, the crisis of Kurds spilling over the border into Turkey. So what we're concerned with is regional stability. We're concerned with, you know, with balance and so on. You know, the irony of it is I'm hearkening back to Mary's point very on. You know, we talk about our values. You know, part of what got us into this mess was, you know, a neoconservative worldview that said, let's go to Iraq and make it a demonstration piece of American liberal democracy in the Middle East. And that didn't work out so well.
Well, of course, you're wrong about that. Actually, it worked
out. I'm wrong about everything, Chris. You're the only one who's right, obviously.
No, not at all. I've got a lot to account for.
Maybe we should listen to the other guests. How would that be?
I want to hear what Chris has to say about this.
Yeah, sure.
Let me tell you something, Tom. Maybe you and I should do a show together sometime. But I'll tell you this. What was handed over, and this isn't Roebling talking, this is Thomas Friedman and any number of folks who study the region diligently. What was handed over to Obama and Biden was extraordinary. Now, I am the first, and in fact, in the commercial breaks, I've been sharing stories with Mary about how George Bush the Younger did a terrible job on certain elements in terms of Iraq, et cetera, et cetera. And I hear your point about the neocons, and that's kind of an easy, facile Democrat talking point to attack the neocons. But the idea that there has to be a jump-started transition in this region is not completely false. It is not completely wrong. And it is a way for us to compensate the region for the fact that for decades we chose stability over reform. And you and I both know that was a conscious choice that was made by Democrat and Republican, by liberal and conservative. And every person who made that choice knew that someday we'd have to pay for it. Now, how are you going to pay for it? Are you going to leave the region to the ISIS and ISIL people? Are you going to leave the region to jihadists and fundamentalists like Martin Marty detailed in 1995? Or are you going to try and help that region progress to a new reality?
All right, let's let Tom.
Yeah, I think, you know, we are doing exactly that as we're doing now. I think the thing, though, that we have to realize is that we stand for basic rights. We're not, you know, much as I consider myself a believer, we are a secular society. And whoever said earlier on that they know what we are, that they hate us for it, is absolutely right. There's no question. We don't need a strategic communication plan to tell them what we are. They've already figured that out. But the thing is, we have to understand that there are, within certain parameters, there are a broad array of ways in which people will choose to order their lives that can be vastly different than ours.
You support female genital mutilation?
Absolutely. That's why we're going to war to stop them, for heaven's sakes. That's absolutely
what. So you're inviting Ayan Hirsi Ali to DePaul to speak to your students?
I'm not aware. I haven't invited her, but I would.
Where do you draw the line? I mean, where do you really, Tom, does your skin get into the game? Really?
I
mean, it is so easy to say there are different ways for people to live, and we're going to respect all of that. But Ayaan Hirsi Ali has been turned down this week by Yale University because pusillanimous professors and their student lackeys complained that she did not represent the entire post-religious experience. Now, can you believe, do you stand with the people who are squelching Ayaan Hirsi Ali?
Let's let him respond, Tom.
Absolutely not. I'm a great respecter of Ayaan Hirsi Ali, and I am not a moral relativist by any stretch of the imagination. But if you let me finish without interrupting, the simple fact here is, yes, genital mutilation, attacking women, crucifying people, beheading people, murdering the Azizi, destroying the oldest Christian community in the region are abhorrent, and we are intervening to prevent exactly that. That is what I'm arguing in favor of doing. The notion that we can come in and very specifically say, here's how you order your society, consider this, most of the allies we have, Qatar, the Emirates, Bahrain, Jordan, are not democracies. None of them are. Now, I don't want to live in any of those countries. By the same tokens, I don't really think it's terribly effective to come over and say, here's how you shall order your lives.
Tom,
basic, fundamental human rights are what we stand for.
Basic. I want to switch gears and talk about something that may be clearly nearer to our shores, maybe of greater immediate concern for everyone listening to the program this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, we talked about the beginning of the program. There were two incidents last week, one involving a radical Islamist who cut off a head in Oklahoma City, and then we had the incident with a disgruntled employee in Chicago. It shut down the FAA,
right.
A mental illness there. So people are very concerned. Those are two incidents that they have received national, worldwide attention. What is happening now, and what can we as a nation do or society do to root out those who are living in our midst,
mm-hmm.
who are on the border or on the verge of joining an international jihad against the United States, and they're carrying American passports and they were born and bred in America? How do we track them down, and how do we get them before they get us?
Well, you're lumping together a number of things. I mean, you have a phenomenon when things go, you know, when the level of tension in the international community arises, something called the psych ward effect, where this triggers some copycatting and even triggers the instability of mentally ill people, like the man who went in to the Aurora Control Center.
Right.
As far as countering radicalization, that's a grassroots community effort. I've actually been doing a fair amount of work with that, along with the people I teach with for the Department of Defense on counterterrorism and venues around the world, is that you get, you know, that basically goes working through the communities, working through synagogues, you can have that too, but realistically right now it's working with moderate Muslims. By the way, we also are very worried about fundamentalist, radical, white supremacist, Christian identity terrorism as well. Let's not forget, before 9/11, the worst attack was perpetrated by Timothy McVeigh.
No, I said that in the first hour.
Great, I'm glad you did. But the other thing is that the Quilliam Foundation in London is very good about this. If you Google it, Quilliam, you'll find it really goes into schools, goes into mosques, goes into youth groups, discussion groups, and says, hey, you know, we are not, this is not us. You want to do something at the grassroots level. A church I belong to formed a partnership with a mosque in Morton Grove. More churches should do that. More synagogues should do that. You educate parents to spot the signs of radicalization the same way you train them to spot drug addiction or being recruited into a cult. It's a long, slow, steady thing. Get good intelligence. We caught that young woman out in Colorado before she did harm to herself or anybody else. That's how you fight it.
Are we going to have to give up more of our civil liberties to get to a point where more of the bad people are caught?
No, that's the real conversation that I wish we would have more of, you know, is that you have to strike a balance in any society between the rights of individuals and the collective security of everybody. And that's a tough, tough conversation to have. I don't see a huge erosion of that. I'm not terribly worried. On the other hand, I do want regulation and oversight. You know, I think basically education is a large part of it. But let's be honest, you know, getting information from the internet, metadata from phone conversations, it's part of the game. I mean, we live in a high-tech world. We live in an interconnected world. You have to do these things.
Have the events of the last week and actually of the last several months with the number of foreign fighters that have gone to fight and joined the jihad, has it, in your opinion, or should it, in your opinion, affect who we let into this country or who we let back into this country?
Absolutely. You know, at the risk of being kicked out of the liberal club, I'm in favor of detaining people who we can clearly identify have served with ISIL. I don't have a problem with that. The British want to do that. I think the French will do that as well. The really difficult problem is going to be is in this interconnected world, there are lots of people who live in Chicago who have relatives in Syria, in Lebanon, in Turkey, in Iraq, who have perfectly good reasons to go back and forth. The ISIL doesn't fly. The radicals don't fly to Damascus. They fly to Istanbul and go over the border by land. And so I don't want to start a witch hunt. If we can get good intelligence on people who clearly have been involved in essentially making war against the United States, we have every right to detain them.
All right, we're going to pause for a break. 1-800-723-8289. One more segment coming up in a couple of minutes.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and again, we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk. We haven't even talked about Eric Holder, but before we talk about Eric Holder, I do want to say we have a lot of listeners in the Youngstown, Ohio area, and again, I know to many people in that area, there are condolences that are appropriate tonight because of the death of Jim Traficant, the longtime congressman. Again, there was a fall from grace. He did serve time. He came back, tried to do a little stint in talk radio. But again, one of the most colorful political leaders, certainly in the last 50 years, a member of the House. And again, he died as a result of a tractor accident this afternoon. So our condolences to his family and also a guest once upon a time when we did our show live from Youngstown, Ohio. Let's talk. We've only got a few minutes left. But again, we've gotten so bogged down in our battle with ISIS and with a lot of combustible discussion this evening. Let's talk a little bit about Eric Holder. Mary, your farewell comments to Eric Holder.
It's going to be a very long farewell. He may have resigned, but he's not leaving office until his replacement is approved or confirmed. And with the way things are going, it might be 2 years.
Did he walk on water?
No. He didn't do enough to go after the criminals in the banking industry.
Mm-hmm. With that, Chris Roebling,
I think the long farewell comes from the fact that all of the investigations that he has squelched during his time in office are going to come back to hurt him, and I don't think there's a more deserving recipient of that sort of attention than Eric Holder. I think he is, without doubt, the worst attorney general in our history. I'm happy to see him leaving, and I wish it would be sooner rather than later.
Tim Carlitis.
I think he acted as the person he's always been. He's an activist. From his college days at Columbia, taking over ROTC offices, to his friend in the White House, who also was a community organizer. This is what they do. This is how they act. Why should we be surprised?
He's the most divisive figure in the administration. And he's also the single largest donor to the Obama reelect by not prosecuting the new Black Panthers. Oh. He set a new low. He set a new low. As a former commissioner of elections, he set a new low in terms of election administration, ballot integrity, and ballot security. He has opposed everything that is reasonable, and he's done it on a race-based justification, which I believe has served to further alienate American society. He is the worst.
Mary?
Please. I mean, you know, you have situations where in Indiana, the people who were disenfranchised by the voter registration included the nuns at St. Mary's because they didn't have the proper ID. And boy, was that really
has he done an aggressive independent investigation of the IRS scandal, in your view?
Did he do an independent investigation? No. I mean, that's the fact.
Why did he say he would? Perhaps you should come out with this information that he obviously has now because he has chosen not to do the investigation. Maybe you have that and you can share it with
us. I believe
that
he hasn't done an investigation because he knows how guilty these guys are. It's just a stonewall. I mean, this administration stonewall of the truth. You know, whenever people say, oh, Fast and Furious, there never was anything there. Answer, then why don't they disgorge all of the information? Same thing with the AP. Same thing with James Rosen. Same thing with the IRS. It's been one scandal after another. And he, I think, is leaving because finally, Judicial Watch got the judge to announce that the United States Department of Justice can no longer stonewall the release of the emails.
Did he do anything positive? What about he dealt with inequities in sentencing? He dealt
important.
And was joined by a lot of Republicans.
Inequities in sentencing
overcharging.
The overcharging. I think that
that's bad.
That's good. I think that's one good thing that he did.
Right. And also on another side for liberals. I mean, he was one of the the spying on the reporters, which Chris did mention, but also national NSA expansion happened under his watch. I mean, there's a lot of civil libertarians that look at that piece of his record as not being very effective, or certainly not something that liberals like.
And he didn't go after the banks, and he didn't.
Go after the banks. I think that's the big one. That nobody took a fall because of
And he also, I don't think, has done enough on the voting rights.
Did he not do the banks because too many of those bankers are supporters of Barack Obama?
I think that the amount of regulatory capture between Wall Street and the government is immense, and it is not just a
regardless of party.
I think those people are so rich and powerful, if
they had a case against any banker and they didn't bring it, then for shame. Okay, I'm not aware of them having a case, because in the United States Department of Justice, and when you get a heater case, it has to be cleared by main justice, and they have to read your evidence. And if some U.S. attorney in L.A. or Chicago or New York City, the Southern District of New York or the Eastern District, somebody out there had a case and they sent it to main justice, and Eric Holder said no, for shame, it's another dereliction of duty.
I don't think it probably ever got that high. I think that the word came down, don't bother. Just like,
well, then
just
he
like,
ran a corrupt
just like,
department.
Just
then
like
you're
the
accusing
SEC,
him.
Just like at the SEC and with those 46 hours of taped conversation.
Oh, I listened to those yesterday. Ira Glass, the Ira Glass program. Carmen Segarra, hidden... The secret tapes of Carmen Segarra.
Right.
Not to get a plug in for another radio show here.
That's okay. Ira Glass goes into the Radio Hall of Fame on November 9th.
Basically, they fired her because she wanted Goldman Sachs to follow the law.
And so if you're saying that the word went down through the Justice Department network, then you're saying that he was presiding over a corrupt Department of Justice.
And on that pleasant note, for conservative Republicans listening to the broadcast, we say farewell to Chris Roebling. Chris, thanks very much for being with us. Tim Carlitis, Mary Hardigan, thank you very much for being with us. Tom McKinnis also joining us from DePaul University on the phone for a portion of our program this evening. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WWS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Chris Zweig and Dan Dorpin for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, when our good friend Chris Roebling will be sitting in for yours truly. This is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Svengoolie has been clearing the air lanes for a long time. Celebrate with MeTV, WCIU the U, and the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Friday, October 10th for an evening with Rich Coes, celebrating 35 years as Svengoolie. See the new Svengoolie exhibit, meet the man, and dress up for a costume contest. For tickets and more information, go to museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Brought to you by MeTV, the U, and these sponsors.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Clear the air lanes. Clear all air lanes.
Svengoolie has been clearing the air lanes for a long time. Celebrate with MeTV, WCIU the U, and the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Friday, October 10th for an evening with Rich Coes, celebrating 35 years as Svengoolie. See the new Svengoolie exhibit, meet the man, and dress up for a costume contest. For tickets and more information, go to museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Brought to you by MeTV, the U, and these sponsors.